show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said.
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show, proud member of the Head On Radio Network. And we're going to be with you for 2 hours, actually an hour and 47 minutes and 48 seconds. Yeah, I'm one of those guys with the time... Seemed like everybody in radio is a time freak. Did you know that? It's a sickness, I tell you. It's one I wish I didn't have, but it's one of those things I had with me since I was a little kid. Just can't stand not being on time. I'd rather take a beating than not being on time. Don't know what it is. I'm one of those ones that wake up in the middle of the night. I got to know what time it is. I've got one of those clocks beside my bed with the light on it so I can see what time it is. Are any of you that crazy? Well, I am, unfortunately. Hey, we've got a good show for you today. We are going to have Carolyn Kay with us coming up at the bottom of this hour. Carolyn has the great website, MakeThemAccountable.com, and the newsletter that goes along with it, something not to be missed each and every day. She and I are going to discuss the trials and tribulations of being on the left in the media, so to speak. And coming up at, right after the top of the second hour, we're going to have Mark Green, president of Air America, and he's going to talk to us about his new book, Losing Our Democracy. It's a good read, and I enjoyed it and got my copy of it, Tuesday, and started reading through it. Haven't completely finished it yet, but it's a good read, and we'll have an interesting conversation with him coming up around 4:15 or so. All right. Yes, lots going on today in the political world, and for those of you that have never been here before, that's what we talk about most of the time. We do not hardly ever mention Britney Spears. I just did. We don't mention who are some of the others. I'm so bad about that. I can't even remember these kids' names, all these teeny bopper actors and singers and pop. I've said before, I'll see one of these ads coming on TV advertising one of these award shows, and they'll list off a big long list of names, and I don't know if I'm embarrassed or what I feel about it, but oftentimes I've never heard a single one of them. And the same thing goes with actors and actresses nowadays. God, I don't know very many of them. I really don't. Anyway, we'd love for you to join the program today, 866-546-5254. Yeah, Bob is on the chat room. He said Lindsay Lohan. Yeah, I forgot. Paris Hilton. Okay, yeah. I just saw that Paris Hilton film the other day. You know the one I'm talking about, everybody. It's the first time I've seen it. That's how far behind I am. Wasn't anything to write home about. Certainly not. Anyway. Everybody said, what film? Okay, you know what film I'm talking about. 866-546-5254. I did want to catch up on a couple of things that I promised people I would talk about last week, and I'm just going to take a moment to do it. I get email all the time from folks, and I got some last week after we talked about the evangelical TV preachers that are being investigated. And I got a couple of interesting notes from Stuart, one of our regular listeners. He said, how come preachers like Robertson, who blame New Orleans or New York for tragedies because of their sinful ways, are utterly silent about the drought in the fundamentalist areas of Georgia and Alabama? Good point, Stuart. Good point. And another one, Stuart says, after listening to you talk about Blackwater, Fox and Giuliani and Don Young, one question comes to mind. Can you imagine what the Russians and Chinese think when Bush and Cheney lecture them on democracy, let alone the Iraqis? Another excellent point. My God. You all do remember how Bush was over there with Shashkevili. I think that's his name. Shashkevili of Georgia. Tell him what a great job he was doing promoting democracy, and then he pulls a Musharraf in his own country. And then from Barb. Barb's over in Miami, and again, in response to talking about Jan and Paul Crouch, the evangelicals, she said, during the 6 years we lived in Bedford, Texas, my son worked as a manager of a Tony Roma's restaurant. Jan and Paul Crouch used to frequent the restaurant. None of the waiters wanted their table. You know why? Because they never left the server a tip. They always left a little card saying, God bless you. We'll see you in heaven. This guy couldn't afford to give a kid working as a server a few bucks. How disgraceful. Well, yeah. So I want to thank you for all your correspondence. I love reading your great ideas and so forth. Always interesting to me to hear from you each and every day. And it doesn't get any stranger than this. I had to jot this down. I was reading some news stories today. How strange can it get? On Wednesday, around noon, Laura Bush was honored for her work at the White House in a ceremony with the health and education and the welfare of children. That was on Wednesday, about noon. In the evening before her honor, her idiot husband vetoed the bill that specifically help the health, the education, and the welfare for children. Amazing. Even for Washington, D.C., it's amazing. It really is. I don't know how they do it. And you know, one of the questions I wanted to ask everybody today, and yes, we are live today. It is November the 15th, 3:07:55 in the afternoon Eastern Time. I'd like to know if any of you call today at 866-546-5254, I'd like to know your feelings. Do you doubt that a lot of people don't want Hillary Clinton as president just because she's a woman? Personally, I think if you doubt that, you're blind. I think there are many, many, many people out there that will not vote for her just because she is a woman, solely because she's a woman. And I heard that crazy guy Hannity. Yeah, how nuts is he? How completely insane is he? He said that Clinton's low turnover with White House staff was because everybody was scared to leave. They had him intimidated. They couldn't leave. Oh, my God. And, we got a debate tonight coming up in Las Vegas. So I'm sure that'll be another extravaganza of just solid questions and answers. I'm sure all the candidates will completely and fully answer every question that's put to them. I don't know whether I'll watch that tonight or not. I was so put off and bored by that last one. Am I alone in this? These debates just seem like so much fluff. They bore the hell out of me. They really do. And another story in the news today that just sickens me, I do. It's the reason I don't watch any pro sports. It's one of the reasons I don't watch any pro sports anymore. Number one, it bores me. I love college sports, high school sports. Pro sports just bores me to death. And one of the reasons I think it is A-Rod. Alex Rodriguez, it looks like he's going to sign a new contract with the Yankees after all this talk for 10 years for $275 million. $275 million. Fantastic. Utterly fantastic. The guy, the groundskeeper at the stadium, probably makes $100 a day. You've got you know, the guy vending the hot dogs, the guy cleaning the restrooms at the stadium, probably the whole damn crew there don't make that kind of money added together. And A-Rod, for playing a kid's game, gets $275 million over 10 years. It's not inked yet. The contract isn't, but it looks... One of the reasons that we're here every day is to educate and make people aware of just what is happening around the country. And I have a good friend who happens to be in the real estate business. And they told me today that... She told me today that she knows a couple who has no TV or no computer. And the reason she brought this up, we're talking about people that kind of have their head in the sand and don't know what's going on in the world. A real estate agent has a home for sale for these folks. And they've had it for sale for like 6 weeks now, all that. And it hasn't sold yet. And they were wondering that, gee whiz, why hasn't our house sold after this long, long period of time, 6 weeks? And my real estate friend told me that they don't have a computer and they don't have a TV, and they had no clue as to the bad housing market. Can you imagine that? And that's kind of getting around to one of the things we're at, you know, about here at this program, is to educate people and to inform them and to keep you. Of course, if you don't have a computer, why, you're not going to be listening to us today, but... It's just so interesting that people in this day and age would be so just so in the dark about the housing market, which is a major, major, major influence on our economy, a major influence. I'll do something I don't normally do this time of day. I think I'll head over to the phones right away and see what's happening. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Oh, Guy, it's Eileen Proctor. I'm sorry, I didn't realize it was called.
Oh, we're on the air right now.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, that's somebody wanting an interview. I guess I should have the call screened, but I don't. Anyway, one of the things I wanted to talk to you, see, that's what I get for doing something out of the ordinary that I don't normally do, going to the phones this early in the day. I've watched Harry Reid, and actually I was out in the outer lobby of the studio a few minutes ago, and watching TV, and I see Harry Reid is on C-SPAN. I watch Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi very carefully right now, and they're the so-called leadership of my party, and I'm very distrustful of them. I really am. They're okay people. I've met them both, been around them. But I'm distrustful of them right now politically, and why don't I trust them? Well... I don't have to tell most of you that I haven't exactly been thrilled at their performances since they've gained a majority in the House and the Senate. I think both of them have been less than adequate, to say the least, the very least. But right now it's about this little kabuki dance the party leadership is doing over the proposed money for the Bush War. Harry stands there boldly before the press on Tuesday and says flatly that the Democrats won't approve more money for the Bush War this year unless Junior Bush agrees to bring troops home. Reid says that the bill requires Bush to initiate troop withdrawals immediately with the goal of ending combat by December 2008. And Reid says, and let me quote him, said, if Bush vetoes the bill, then he won't get his $50 billion. And Nancy Pelosi, of course, has said the same thing. The Daily Kos reports, and then said, "If and let me quote the Daily Kos, if Reid and Pelosi stand firm on this, they'll have a chance to finally fulfill one of their key 2006 campaign promises and prove that they have the strength and fortitude to stand tough for what they believe, all the while giving the vast majority of the American people what they want." Wow. Wow, what a statement. I'm giddy over such a thoughtful declaration from the Daily Kos. Strength and fortitude to stand tough for what they believe. Man, I'm just overcome with emotion after reading that. The only trouble with this Daily Kos statement is that it's total BS. It's baloney. Kos wants us to trust the leadership once again. and evidently thinks this bill is something new and bold and courageous, and that's pure poppycock. Let's take a closer look at this bill for just a few minutes and separate the politician talk from reality. Let's take a minute and cut through the crap and find out what this bill that Harry Reid is so boldly talking about, let's find out what it really says. Read it closely. What it really says is that we'll keep right on having tens of thousands of troops in Iraq for years to come. Yes, it does. It really says that. That's right. That is what it actually says. Forget what Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi, and the other Democrats say. Do remember that they're politicians and they're apt to lie to us now and then for their own selfish political reasons. Who knew? But let's just take a closer look at this. The bill says it, quote, requires a transition in the mission of U.S. forces in Iraq from primarily combat to force protection and diplomatic protection, limited support to Iraqi security forces, and targeted counterterrorism operation, and it prohibits deployment of any troops not fully equipped and trained, waivable with a presidential national security certification. The problem with this statement is that it's completely full of holes, loopholes. It says absolutely nothing about the U.S. and what they're called now enduring bases, and nothing about the U.S. embassy in Baghdad, that huge, monstrous compound. And do take a close look at the exceptions it mentions. U.S. forces in Iraq shall be transitioned to force protection and diplomatic protection, limited support to Iraqi security forces, and target counterterrorism operations. So let's sift that all out, separate the wheat from the chaff, the corn from the cobs, and all that. What does that all mean? It means that the troops are not going anywhere. It means that they're going to be redeployed to different categories of crap jobs in Iraq. They're going to stay and train Iraqi forces, whatever the hell that means nowadays. It means that thousands of American troops will be stationed in those enduring bases just in case. In other words, they're not coming home. If this bill passed right now, if it passes right now exactly the way it's written by the Democrats and Junior Bush decides to sign it, it means not one damn thing because it requires nothing. It'll change nothing. Tens of thousands of American troops will remain in Iraq for many, many years to come, if not decades. And another thing it means is that the killing and the slaughter will go right on. It means we are not leaving. That is what this means. Don't get all up in the air about this bill, Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi grandstanding, because it's nothing but a crock. Understand this. This bill means nothing in the way of meaningful change for our military. Nothing. But you read the press, why, it looks like a whole different story. It makes out the Democrats to be so brave they want to end the war, and they're going to force Bush to withdraw troops. Don't forget, this thing sets a December of 2008 as a goal. A goal. Since when have politicians in Washington met a goal that you can remember, a meaningful goal? And do remember that Bush is already planning on bringing some troops home. So what's gained here by this bill? Nothing. Nothing. What does it all mean? It means the politicians, one more time, can have it both ways, as usual. The Democrats can go back to their voters and say, well, I kept my promise. I'm trying to end the war. And they'll convince the media and thousands of bloggers like the Daily Coast that they're noble and they're worthy of our trust. They're ending the war. Yeah, sure. And like the Daily Coast and other various bloggers and pundits, they're going to say, glory, hallelujah, the Democrats are great, and we need to elect more of them, and the Democrats will win the elections even bigger next time, and then the Republicans will have them exactly where they want them. The Republicans will blame the Democrats for every last problem with the Middle East. It'll no longer be Bush's war. Oh, no, 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 no. It's going to be the Democrats' war then. And the press, right along with the right-wing media, will tear them to shreds. The Democrats would be fools to fall into this trap, but I don't doubt they'll jump in it with both feet right now. They usually do. The time to stop this madness is right now. Not off some cloudy place in the future. Not some hazy goal for December 2008. Stop it right now. Defund this war now. No promises for this or that, no goals, no shady goals, no $50 billion more that Bush can spend to further this quagmire. Call it quits right now. Forget using our troops as political pawns. Forget using the Iraqi people as pawns. Get us the hell out of there now. That is what the people want. They don't want some murky deadline off in the future someplace. They don't want more political BS coming out of Washington. They don't need this crap from the Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi. All we want is some action. And they know what kind of action we want. And this is not it. Get us out. Now, do I expect the Democrats to do this? No. Hell no. They've shown you, they've shown me, time and time and time again, they don't have the spine to do the right thing here. They're just going to continue on playing politics with this whole rotten mess, and they're going to end up getting bitten in the ass once again. And the only trouble is that when they get bitten in the ass, we feel the pain. I am so disgusted with this after I've done an in-depth look at what Reid and Pelosi are proposing here. It's fluff. It's cotton candy. It doesn't mean anything. And damn it, they owe us more than that. They owe us the truth. Sickens me, it really does. Well, we're going to pause for a quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
This is Billy Shears. Join us this Thursday on Foxed Up at his new time, 12 midnight, following nighttime Cup of Joe. We'll take a look at the king, Elvis Presley.
The first car I ever bought was the most beautiful car I've ever seen. It was secondhand, but I parked it outside of my hotel the day I got it. I sat up all night just looking at it.
Be there this Thursday on Foxed Up at his new time, 12 midnight, right here on the Head On Radio Network, and find out what happened to that car.
I say, oh, meet me in a hurry behind the bar. Don't you be afraid that I'll do you no harm. I want you to bring along my rocking shoes, cause tonight I'm going to rock away.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year, and a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run with those scissors,
it's the least you can do.
Oh, it's quiet today. Why is that? Why is it all of a sudden on Thursday very, very quiet? I don't know. don't get it. We've got an interview coming up at the bottom of the hour with Carolyn Kay from MakeThemAccountable.com. And in the second hour, Mark Green, president of Air America and author of the new book, Losing Our Democracy, is going to be with us. So we've got a lot of good talk ready for you coming up here in the next hour and 35 minutes. So do stay tuned here on The Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. 866-546-5254. I have really looked at this Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi thing. As you might have guessed by now, I am very, very unhappy with both of them over the way they're handling this. And, you know, one more time, we're just getting more political BS from these people. And don't they owe us more than that? Don't you think we could do a lot better in leadership? I certainly think so. Harry Reid, to me, is the weakest Senate majority or minority leader that we've had in my lifetime. I can't remember one nearly as weak as Harry Reid. And Nancy Pelosi talks a good game, but that's about all. Hasn't gotten a whole lot done so far. So I was so impressed with her speech when she accepted the speakership. But since then, I think it's all been downhill for Nancy Pelosi. And I know the Democrat Party people don't like hearing me say that, but that's how I feel. That's how it is. And we got to tell it like it is on this program. That's what we owe everybody. 866-546-5254. Very interesting news today. Very, very interesting. Friends and supporters have established a legal defense fund for former Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, who's still facing an ongoing Justice Department investigation into whether he committed perjury or improperly tampered with congressional witnesses. This is unbelievable. This is the letter. There are rare moments when you, the citizens, can feel like you've really made a difference. Not since Scooter Libby has a devoted, loyal public servant been in such need of your help. Alberto Gonzalez was set upon by hordes of journalists and Democrats and finally stepped down for the good of his beloved Justice Department. But his ordeal is not over because his enemies misrepresented certain carefully chosen phrases as lies. He's being investigated by that same department. But what can I do, you ask? Well, David Leitch, a Gonzalez friend and general counsel at the Ford Motor Company, wrote in an email solicitation to potential contributors last month that Gonzalez is innocent of any wrongdoing, but does not have the means to pay for his legal defense after a career spent mostly in public service. In the hyper-politicized atmosphere that's descended on Washington, an innocent man cannot simply trust that the legal will out. Litz wrote he must engage highly competent legal counsel to represent him. That costs money that Al Gonzalez does not have. And so a contribution form asking for donations to the Alberto Gonzalez Legal Expense Trust suggests amounts from $500 to $5,000. So I know you'll all want to contribute. Please do. I don't have the address where it is. You can do the Alberto Gonzalez Legal Expense Fund. I know that most of my listeners are going to want to contribute to that. Just Google it, the Alberto R. Gonzalez Legal Expense Trust. And be sure and throw in a few bucks for me as well, won't you? We're going to pause for another quickie break very, very briefly. And we will be back with Carolyn Kay, our first guest of the day, momentarily.
This magic moment, so different and so new, but like any other. Until I kissed you, and then it happened. It took me by surprise. I knew that you felt it too. By the look in your eyes, sweeter than wine, softer than the summer night. Everything I want I have. Whenever I hold you tight,
Back with you here on the Guy James Show. Welcome, everybody. And as promised, we now have with us Carolyn Kay from MakeThemAccountable.com. Carolyn, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Guy. Good to be here.
This is long overdue to have you on the show, and I do apologize for that. We get busy in what you and I do, and we have our noses so engrossed in things, we sometimes don't get things we ought to get done.
There's just so much to do.
you never get caught up. And as you know, and as I mentioned in a brief email exchange, you and I have been around doing this for a long time now.
Right. I started my website in October of 2000, so that's 7 years now.
2000. You see, I mean, that's literally the dark ages in the internet, isn't it?
Yes, I got started watching what was going on actually in the spring and summer of 2000, and became concerned with how I saw the media treating Al Gore versus how they treated George Bush, and ended up joining the Gore campaign as an internet activist kind of thing. And they would send me, in those days there were no blogs, but they would send me to message boards for the various media and so on. And at that time, the right-wingers owned all of the message boards. I mean, they were their mean, nasty selves, you know, pushing and shoving and telling everybody to shut up and all of that.
I hadn't heard that.
And so we did what we could to fight them. But I became concerned because, you know, I grew up in the South. I grew up in Louisiana. And I know coded racial stuff when I hear it, okay? And that's what these people were doing. A lot of the comments that they were posting were very racist, very anti-female, anti-feminist for sure. And I started to get concerned. I said, my God, you know, if especially the way the media were treating both of the candidates, I said, if Bush prevails, these people are only going to get bolder. And, of course, Bush did prevail, and they did get bolder.
Yeah, he did, and they have. No question. You're in Chicago, right?
Yes.
And a long time ago, I remember back when Air America was first just a thought, Sheldon and Anita. You were somehow hooked up with them? You were friends with them back then?
Right. I worked for them a bit. At the very beginning, helped answer all of the emails that that they got when the first announcement in the New York Times happened. I think that was in early 2003, and at that time they were still putting together the concept and trying to find funding and so on. And there have been a lot of wrinkles and so on since then. But
for those of you who don't know who we're talking about, we're talking about Sheldon and Anita Dobny there with Nova M now out in Phoenix,
right?
They now
have a new network called Nova M, right?
Yeah, and I really don't know how that's going. I haven't paid close attention. For your information, a little later on in the program today, we've got Mark Green on, so it's going to be interesting hearing from them. You know, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about today, you've been around, as you've explained, doing this for a long time now, and I have as well. And the left is just like a hive of bees right now, feeling that the Congress we put in office isn't listening to us, and there's a frustration level like I don't think I've seen before. How do you feel it? And the big question I wanted to discuss with you today is, do you get that feeling of hopelessness about this whole mess, especially about what you do and what I do that I get now and then?
I do from time to time start to feel like either, despite all our efforts, we're losing ground, or, gee, is it all worth it? You know, you can't help but have those feelings from time to time when it seems like failure after failure after failure. Even with success, we get failure. And so what I have to do, and I learned this very early on in the summer of 2000, that I can either let all of this stuff make me very, very angry and I can scream and yell and throw things and get sick or, you know, whatever might happen. Or I can put myself in learning mode, and that's what I try to do most of the time. I'm not always successful, but most of the time I can say when something hits me and I say, you know, this is really, really bad, I can say, okay, think about who said it, how it was worded, why they might have said it, what would be the ways to refute what they said, what would be the best response, you know, and those kinds of things, which keeps me from feeling powerless, you know, totally powerless over the situation, and gives me some alternatives about what to do and how to do it. So that's my cure for you know, trying to figure out what to do and how to do it.
Well, I do this a lot, and I know you do it. You do your newsletter, by the way, is invaluable to me. And,
thank you.
It really is. And everybody can sign up at that. Sign up for that at makethemaccountable.com. Right.
Right.
You should have that in your email every day. Everybody should have. We've mentioned it before on the program, but you really need to have this every day. If you want a nice digest of what's really important in the political world and other things as well, you really need to have Carol's newsletter every day, because it's one of the first things, as soon as it comes in every day, I read that baby. I do.
Well, that was my purpose. I'm glad to hear you say that, that you are seeing that newsletter and understanding it exactly the way it is intended, that what I try to do is to give Americans the best synopsis of the news of the day to help them carry out their duties as citizens. You may have noticed that I don't carry any information about horse race type stuff on races. You know, I don't care if so-and-so's up in the polls and so-and-so's down in the polls and what this one is saying about that one and all of that stuff. I only post, unless it's something wrong that the media is portraying about one of those situations. But mostly when it comes to candidates, at least in my nation section, I only post their proposals, stuff, you know, things that they actually say that they're going to do. In the case of the Democrats, hopefully it's something that's great and that I agree with. In case of Republicans, it's usually something crazy like, let's come up with a million-man army.
Yeah.
Which was Fred Thompson's latest.
Yeah. I love it.
Again, Americans need to know that. They need to know what these people are proposing. And the rest of it, I don't care about. I don't care who's jumping on whom and stuff.
Well, like, in other words, you care more about truth than you do politics.
Absolutely.
That's
call me crazy.
Well, I do too. And just right before you came on today, I was talking about this latest Harry Reid. I don't know how you feel about him and Nancy Pelosi, but I'm not particularly enamored with either one of them right now. And you know, he gets up and huffs and puffs in front of the media and says, "Well, we're going to deny Bush this money unless he gives it." And when you start reading through the lines on that proposal, it doesn't mean anything. It's not going to bring our troops home. It's just all politics. And just for once, wouldn't it be refreshing to have one of them stand up there and say, "You know, can we talk?"
Well, here's the worst part about that is that they pretend, at least in the Senate, they pretend that there's nothing they can do.
Yeah.
And that is not at all true. In the Senate, all you need is 40 people on your side, or 41, to sustain a filibuster. And you can filibuster until the cows come home. You can keep any business from happening in the Senate. And these are the kinds of things that Republicans do to great effect. They have managed to stop a lot of the initiatives that the Democrats have tried to come up with. And the Democrats, instead of, you know, using those same tools against them, just to go, oh, we need more people. We need 60 people in the Senate. Well, if they had 60 people in the Senate, they still would have some blue dog Democrats.
That's right.
You know, and they still wouldn't be able to get their override majority or whatever. So it's pretty frustrating to watch from the outside.
It is. And Harry hasn't even had the gall to inconvenience the Republicans enough to make them actually do a real filibuster for a change.
Right, exactly.
You know, we had that little deal with the
going to filibuster, and
yeah,
that's enough.
We had that little tiff, what was it, back in the spring where they had their cots overnight,
yeah,
one night, and they made, oh my, we've got to be there all night. What'll we do? Well, let's have a good old-fashioned filibuster and see how
right.
long they last.
Make them read the Bible.
Yeah.
Read the whole Bible standing there.
Yeah, who was it? Who was it? It wasn't Strom Thurmond. It was Bob... Robert Byrd, I believe, that's filibustered for so long one time, but I just like to see them put their feet to the fire one time. And
well, that's the thing, and this is the thing that that they don't seem to understand. You know, I get these little things from Rahm Emanuel and from James Carville and these people. You know, it's a really terrible situation. We need you to donate to the Democratic Party or the DCCC or the DSCC or the whatever. You know, and
too many to keep up with.
I write them back. I really write them back. I say, if you were to actually stand up to Republicans, there would be an outpouring of support and money like you have never even imagined.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not going to happen until you stand up to them, because they're afraid of the right wing, which will put out the word to the media, and the media, like little lapdogs, will follow right along and say, the Democrats are being so bad and so mean and so nasty, instead of fighting back on things like that and saying, how dare they?
Yeah.
They are the obstructionists, and they are stopping things from going. How did they? When have you heard that from a Democrat?
Oh, I'm so tired of them heading for their little caves every time. Oh, please don't call us names again.
Please don't call me an empty name.
Yeah, I'm not un-American, really. It's fascinating to me, and I know there's an underlying reason for that, but I'll be doggone, I can't figure out what it is.
Well, I'll tell you, a friend of mine who's had a lot more experience with the internal workings of Congress than I have, said the only thing that he can think of is that on some of these things where they ought to stand up and fight, they may have been complicit, you know,
yeah,
like maybe they really were briefed on the spying, you know, the spying on Americans,
mm-hmm,
and maybe they really were briefed on some of this other stuff that now they pretend like they're going to stand up against or whatever. But the problem really is that that they could go to prison too,
yeah,
along with a lot of the Republicans.
Well, it's hard to believe there's any complicity like that within the halls of Congress. I spoke about Congressman Young from Alaska yesterday, which is one of the more fascinating corruption stories I think I've ever heard.
Congressional delegation from Alaska, all of them.
Yeah.
They're all corrupt.
And he's, I live in South Florida, and here he is up in Alaska, down here last year, raising money for a highway, not 2 miles from where I'm sitting right now, for a new exchange for his buddy along the highway that just happens now. It's coincidence to own 4,000 acres there, and Young goes home with a pocket full of money from a fundraiser here, you know, what, 3,500 miles from where he lives? I mean, it's an amazing story.
That's interesting. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's just one of those coinky dinks they're always talking about.
Well, you know, having grown up in Louisiana.
Now, I want you to know, Carolyn, I'm an honorary colonel from the state of Louisiana, and
are
I had
you?
That. I had that. I'm a card carrying honorary colonel, have a plaque, and that honor was bestowed upon me by, personally, I'll have you know, by Governor Edwin Edwards.
Edouard. Oh, my God.
Oh, yes.
He's in prison now.
Yes. So I know a little something.
To put him away.
Oh, what a. Yeah, I got in on a little local politics down at Baton Rouge one night, and I found that. So you are from Louisiana. You know, your speech.
I'm from Lake Charles.
Your speech just doesn't give that away.
Well, you know, even growing up, I felt that there were some Southern accents that are pretty and others that are not. And the one where I came from was not pretty. And I remember being 6 years old and purposely trying to talk like the people on the radio instead of the people around me.
Well, it's not true Southern. Right there. Many times it's hard to identify someone being from the New Orleans area.
Well, New Orleans, this is very interesting. I don't know if people know this, but a lot of people, real New Orleanians, talk very much like people from Brooklyn.
Yes, they do.
And
exactly.
When I'm up here, I always have to ask, are you from New Orleans or are you from Brooklyn?
I imagine that really throws somebody from Brooklyn.
No, I know. But I was talking about it with some friends at one time, and they said, well, think about it. The immigrations into New Orleans, Italian, Irish, German, were very similar to the ones in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Italian, Irish, German.
Yeah.
You know what I meant?
Very much so.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
I love that area, and I found it most interesting to go down there and experience a little bit of their politics.
South Louisiana is a lot of fun. And, you know, that's where I grew up, is South Louisiana. We believe in laissez le bon temps rouler, you know, let the good times roll. And
What that means?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There was a good reason to have me on today.
I'd like to have a big old platter of fresh beignets sitting here right now.
I could dig into that. I love them.
You know, one of the things I wanted to discuss with you today, and I'm going to try and get into it a little later when Mark Green comes on. I'm an avowed liberal. I don't call myself a progressive. This is a liberal democratic radio show.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everybody can wear that progressive moniker if they want to. I am liberal. And there's a hell of a fight going on for the eyes and ears of Americans between the left and the right in the media. And it would seem to me, and I wonder what your thoughts on it, they're important to me, your thoughts are, do you think we're losing this, and are we not only losing, but losing ground? And I say that because even Air America and some of the progressive liberal broadcasters are losing affiliates, even as we talk. Are we trying to approach an animal that just doesn't want to be approached in that way?
Well, I think that I would like to see us approach the problem in a different way. As you may have noticed in my media mailing this morning, I sent out a link to report that I've written, an essay that I've written. I wrote it actually almost 3 years ago, but just updated it recently. That talks about what we should have as a media strategy. Now, I say progressive because, to me, progressive is the antithesis of regressive, which is what the people we're fighting
right.
are. You know, they want to go back to before the revolution and salute King George, you know.
Well, the only reason I won't go with it, and it's because of my stubbornness, they have dirtied the word liberal, and by God, I am not going to allow them to do that to me.
Bow to that, huh? Well, I respect that, and I do call myself a liberal as well, even though I grew up considering myself a conservative, okay? Now, my views have not changed considerably. Okay, but since 2000, for example, the first time somebody called me a communist, I just was floored. I was absolutely floored. A communist. But that's a reflection of how far right the country has gone. And the reason for it is that a few rich right-wing families have invested millions, if not billions of dollars, certainly hundreds of millions of dollars over the last 35 years to convince Americans of some basic untruth, you know, like greed is good, everybody for his own self, you know, those kinds of things that are in antithetical to our nature as human beings. Yes, we do have selfish tendencies, but we also have altruistic tendencies that are built into us. And I'd write a book about that if I could ever find a publisher. So to me, the kinds of things that we need to be doing is to be hitting at those basic situations that, because way too many Democrats believe a lot of the same things. The reason why we don't have enough women in media is because not enough women apply. Now, these are liberals telling me this. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And all the same kinds of excuses that you find to justify racism, to justify misogyny, to justify all these things, I hear coming out of the mouths of people that call themselves liberals and call themselves progressives, and particularly the leadership of the Democratic Party. Okay, and you know, when it comes to business situations and all of that, or economics. And so to me, we have to really spend a lot of effort on a re-education program, bringing people back to the basics of how this country was founded. A lot of people say, oh, well, you know, the ranchers out in the far west, you know, they didn't have neighbors to depend on and stuff, and I go, you must be crazy. What do you think a barn raising was?
That's exactly right.
That wasn't one person doing it all by himself. That or one family even. That was a whole bunch of families getting together to help another family when they had to defend themselves against the people they were stealing the land from. They banded together to do that.
It's no different than today, Carolyn. We want our private lives. We want our independence. We want our liberty. But when we need help, we want to gather together and help one another.
And not only that, that is the source of feeling good long term. That's the thing that gets to me, is this consumerism, the only thing that matters as far as freedom is concerned is the freedom to buy stuff and all of that. That is not the road to happiness.
Absolutely.
And again, I've got all this research that's just dying to be, you know, published in a book, but the real things that make us happy, that give us long-term satisfaction, are our dealings with other people and helping them and having them help us and so on. And it's just, you know, we've been absolutely convinced, or too many Americans have been convinced of the exact opposite.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned about how the playing field has changed with the right, about how things have shifted right. And if you don't believe that, everybody compare what they would consider a real leftist today with a leftist politician in the days of Lyndon Johnson. I mean, there's no comparing the two.
Or go back even further in the 30s, we really did have communists in this country.
Yes.
We've got maybe three now.
Yeah, that's exactly
back
right.
Back then, we really did have communists. And I don't necessarily think there was a whole lot of subversion going on, trying to take over the government as we were taught in civics class by being forced to read J. Edgar Hoover. But I do, you know, they simply had ideas that were different about how society should be structured and what our responsibilities are to one another, and those kinds of things. And to me, those people should have a voice.
Absolutely.
Everybody should be able to express their feeling. It makes me think that these same right-wingers who are so afraid of any words from the left, and they're afraid of words that might go against their religious beliefs or whatever, how fragile must their beliefs be if they're afraid of words?
Oh, I don't think it's ever a leftist crowd that ever had a book burning that I can remember.
So.
And, of course, books and words mean a lot to you. Weren't you a librarian at one time? Or didn't you study at the library?
No, I was not. I'm a systems developer.
Ah, okay. Developer. But you never studied to be a librarian or anything?
No,
where did I get that?
I was in library club in high school.
okay, that's
but
it.
But I do love words, and I do love books, and I do love ideas. College was such a wonderful experience for me because so many people with ideas fermenting and fomenting and being able to discuss things. Nowadays, you can't sit down and discuss anything with anybody because they people feel like they have to attack you personally because you express an idea.
You're so right. The true art of argumentation is gone. And argumentation doesn't mean standing and screaming at each other. It means using reason and logic and facts to discuss a subject with one another. And even if you walk away disagreeing, you've had a good. I miss that too. And I really think.
And in fact, my family. One of my cousins was asking me recently. She said, "What about our parents?" She said, "I don't remember enough of the get-togethers and all." And I said, "Well, what I remember is that they would all get together and they would argue about politics and this and that and the other thing. But it was, but as soon as one side started losing, some of the people would jump on that side. You know, people were able to change their minds and say, well, you know, there's this point over here. But nowadays, if you concede any sort of any, see." I told you I was right and you were wrong. See?
Yeah, you're back to that. What was that great movie? Was it 12 Brave Men or whatever, you know, in the courtroom?
Oh, 12 Angry Men.
Yeah, would that ever happen today? It would not happen today.
No.
You would not change the whole courtroom, you know. And that's a problem because we end up seeking to be around our own kind.
But see, that's another thing that I think we could encourage and show examples of. I think that Hollywood could do us a big favor in that regard. They could put on more TV series and films about people honestly trying to deal with one another and trying to instead of get over on one another, trying to understand the other person's point of view. You know, years ago, I read something by a woman who talked. She was a history professor or something like that. I've never been able to find it again, where she talked about the idea of using stories as a way to teach people moral lessons. And she talked about what we find in the Bible, and you know, Jesus, of course, was the very best person at using stories to teach. You know, his parables are wonderful examples of how to face a situation that's not always clear cut. You know. Like the working on the Sabbath or pulling a donkey out of a pit on the Sabbath or, you know, whatever that story was. Is it the right thing to let the family starve that owns that or is it to follow the law to the letter?
Well,
you know,
I hope we can do something about it or we're all going to end up wearing blue and gray uniforms again someday. And I don't want to see that happen, but certainly the direction we're headed in right now. Carolyn, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today.
Well, I very much enjoyed it.
MakeThemAccountable.com. And I encourage all of you to go there and sign up for Carol's newsletter, which is just fabulous every day. It'll start your day off right. You get your cup of coffee or whatever you have in the morning and start off reading that. And
dig in.
You'll know what I'm talking about. Carol from Make Them Accountable, Carolyn Kay, thank you so much.
Thank you, Guy.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Interesting lady, and if you're not in the habit of going to her website, makethemaccountable.com, associate yourself with that, familiarize yourself with that site, and you will find out that it's a wealth of good information and will point you in the right direction toward the big stories every single day without a, like she said, without a political twist on it, just truth, that's all. And I appreciate her very much. She's been around doing what we do for a long, long time now. First met Carolyn, actually have never met her in person, but actually first started conversing back when right before Air America was getting started. So, and we'll start talking about that in a little while coming up as well. Right now we're going to pause for news coming up at the top of the hour. You're listening to The Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be back right after the news.
opposition leaders. She wants to replace current President General Pervez Musharraf, who imposed emergency rule earlier this month. Musharraf appointed an interim prime minister to run the government until parliamentary elections are held in January. In a speech today, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas called for the overthrow of the Hamas leaders in Gaza. They took over power by force earlier this year. The U.S. is hosting a Middle East peace conference later this month. The UN Nuclear Watchdog Agency reports that Iran has generally been truthful about main aspects of its nuclear history. However, the agency warns that its current knowledge of Tehran's atomic work is decreasing. It also finds that Iran continues to defy the UN Security Council demands to halt the enrichment of uranium, which is a key step in the production of nuclear weapons or energy. Several strong aftershocks with a magnitude 6.2 and 6.6 struck northern Chile less than 24 hours after yesterday's 7.7 magnitude earthquake. About 15,000 people have been left homeless, 150 people were injured, and two were killed by the first quake. A powerful cyclone hit Bangladesh and forced more than 3 million people to flee their homes and head inland. It had 149-mile-an-hour winds. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business Next.
Have you ever found yourself swatting at a fly no one else sees? Chances are you're seeing what we commonly call a floater. Many people have them and have had them for a while. Floaters are condensed proteins located in the gel-like part of our eyes called the vitreous. As we age, this gel becomes more liquefied, and so whatever debris was once trapped inside is now freer to float around. They are typically harmless, but you should check with your eye doctor if you notice new floaters, especially if they appear after a flash of light, or if you should notice a curtaining effect of your side vision. Otherwise, that squiggly critter you see, especially when you look at a blue sky or a white background, is probably with you for life and should simply be ignored. I'm Dr. Nancy Eklund.
The preceding message on Eye Care by Dr. Nancy Eklund has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your eye doctor.
A federal appeals court today voided the new mileage standards for light trucks that were set to go into effect next year. 11 states and environmental groups filed the lawsuit, which would have covered SUVs, minivans, and pickup trucks. At the Los Angeles Auto Show, the Chevrolet Tahoe Hybrid was named the Green Car of the Year. It is General Motors' first model to use a hybrid system developed with BMW, Mercedes, and Chrysler. AAA expects that a record number of Americans, 38.7 million, will travel at least 50 miles or more over the extended five-day Thanksgiving. Holiday period. Gasoline prices nationwide now average $3.11 a gallon. President Bush announced a plan today to allow the airlines to use military airspace to relieve air traffic congestion over the Thanksgiving travel period. The Labor Department reports that consumer prices went up 0.3% in October. London-based Barclays announced it will write down $2.7 billion related to the U.S. subprime mortgage market. Gold is trading at $787.30 an ounce. Light sweet crude trading at $93.43 a barrel. And near the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones is down 122 points, the NASDAQ is down 26 points, and the S&P 500 is down 19. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. Six. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
I couldn't resist. You knew I couldn't. It's that big week for the greatest spectacle in sports, the greatest rivalry ever, the Ohio State University against the University of Meat Chicken. And it'll be played up in Ann Arbor, Meat Chicken, this Saturday. And looking for a great game, and a good time will be had by all, as usual. One of the great events in sports, without question. So that for all of our OSU fans. And as you well know, I'm a little bit of a Buckeye myself, okay? 866-546-5254. Coming up in just a few minutes, we've got Mark Green, President of Air America, author of the new book, Losing Our Democracy, and we'll be talking to him coming up in just a couple of minutes. We appreciate very much having Carolyn Kay on with us today. Carolyn's always delighted, corresponded with her a lot, but never had a chance to actually talk with her today. I see that Junior Bush is they're having a little another little dance coming up, that he wants to make a recess appointment, planning on it. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid is considering what they call pro forma sessions during the Thanksgiving break to stop President Bush from using the break to install any of his outstanding executive branch nominees. And, of course, this controversial Surgeon General nominee, Dr. James Holsinger, is expecting a recess appointment. In fact, he's resigned his job at the university and told everybody that he is going to get a recess nomination. So we shall see if there's a way to get it done. I think they will get it done. Junior's very good at putting it over on Harry and the boys, very much so. And as something comforting, as someone that flies every now and then, the Government Accountability Office reports government investigators smuggled liquid explosives and detonators through airpoint checkpoints, exposing dangerous vulnerabilities in security efforts. Oh, that's nice to know. Said our tests clearly demonstrate that a terrorist group using publicly available information and a few resources could cause severe damage to an airplane and threaten the safety of passengers, the report said. Well, isn't that just dandy? And one more thing. As you well know by now, billionaire investor Warren Buffett has urged Congress to maintain the estate tax. This is one of the richest people saying to keep the estate tax, saying that plans to repeal the tax would benefit a handful of the richest American families and widen income disparity in the United States. Buffett said it would be more appropriate to call the death tax a death present for the wealthy. And it's good that somebody, especially with the as renowned as Warren Buffett and respected as Warren Buffett, says that. So that's a good thing. We're going to pause for a break real quick here and be back in just a minute. We're going to get Mark Green on the phone, and we'll be back in just a sec.
I frame the question in these stark terms.
Are we going to continue to invest American blood and treasure at the same rate we are doing now? For what?
If we continue what you have laid before the Congress here as a strategy, do you feel that that is making America safer?
Sir, I don't know, actually.
We're back, and as promised today, you know, I don't care if you worship the ground Junior Bush walks on or if you share my view that he's the worst president ever. You'll have to admit that he's dramatically altered the balance of power in Washington, D.C. And with us today to explain just how dramatic that change has been is Mark Green. Mark was, as you many of you know, a candidate for mayor of New York, and he was a candidate for attorney general in New York, written a lot of books. He's the president of Air America, and a great new book out, Losing Our Democracy, How Bush, the Far Right, and Big Business Are Betraying America and How to Stop It. Mark, welcome to the program.
I'm delighted to be with you, Guy. Thanks for thinking of me.
Well, it's hard to avoid you nowadays. So you're just all over the place. Every time you're on Keith's show, and I'm trying to not trying to avoid you, but I got your book on Tuesday. I'm about three quarters of the way through it. I haven't had a chance to finish it yet, but it's a good read. It's something that's creeping up on us that I just don't think a lot of people understand. That little by little by little, that frog in the water thing, our democracy is starting to slip away.
Well, there have been a lot of books and critics of Bush Cheney, but I thought it important to have someone connect the dots, as they say, of all their bad decisions. And if you look at their contempt for the rule of law and equal justice under law, if you look at how secretive they are, if you look at how they've merged church and state, for example, how unaccountable they are in promoting the people from Wolfowitz to Tenet with medals of honor who have messed up. if you look at the how indifferent they have been to civil rights, or hostile to civil rights and civil liberties, it adds up to a conclusion. I've never seen an administration so contemptuous of the values of the American democracy. We've had others who've made bad decisions. But this is the most sustained assault on our 218-year tradition of democracy. Still the best definition, Guy, is a system of by and for the people of Abraham Lincoln. And if listeners think, oh, democracy, it's a process. I mean, come on, how does that affect the air, the education, the Iraq War? Think of a car without a motor. The motor is the democracy, which makes sure everybody has a shot at contributing so that the best decisions come out of the process. And if people are not allowed to vote explicitly or implicitly, and if there are secrets that the voters don't know about, and if the law is not applied equally, then we have a crisis in the way you describe. It may not be too hot every day, but the frog is dying incrementally as the temperature goes up in the boiling water.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of Americans have the mistaken idea that that our democracy can't be taken away from us except by some foreign source. And that's not true, is it? I mean, isn't it an internal threat just as dangerous or even more so because of its, well, kind of like its stealthiness, although these guys have been rather in your face with it?
Well, these are people who, as they fly the flag, are trampling on its values far more than a few fools every year who burn it. But the problem is a couple of drunk kids who burn the flag, forgive me, we're bigger and better than that. However, extremism, posturing as patriotism, is a problem. Look, I don't mind a healthy debate on choice, on invading the wrong country after 9/11. But when the president and Cheney said in the fall of 06 that if Democrats win, terrorists win. When the president imprisons people and the Supreme Court, a majority of whom are Republican appointees, say that it violates due process to have hundreds of people in Guantanamo without due process of law. Or when the courts say, and the Justice Department admits, they broke the law in not getting warrants for wiretapping of American citizens, that's radical. It's not left-right radical, it's anti-American radical. So I believe that, frankly, Air America and you, Guy, and are in the mainstream, and these new authoritarians are in the extreme, and I think history will reflect that.
Do you think that when this whole thing started with Cheney and Bush, do you think this whole erosion of our democracy within their administration got started because of the war, or do you think the Junior Bush and Cheney and their people had it planned from the very beginning?
I can't know that, but it's a very good question. You know, Congressman Dick Cheney in 1987 wrote in a report on the so-called Iran-Contra scandal, hey, sometimes the president has to ignore the law and act like a monarch in a time of war. Oh, that's interesting. George W. Bush ran as a moderate Republican, as it was a moderate governor, bipartisan, moderate governor in Texas. And never hinted at anything like this extremism in 2000. Now comes along 9/11, and they are waving that as a bloody shirt to justify every violation of the law. Of course, we're fighting in Iraq, theoretically, to defend democracy, so it's odd that we want to export it while we violate it at home. So there's an inherent contradiction in what they're doing. I think the war has allowed them to act on their anti-democracy impulses. And since half of Bush's base are evangelical Christian Republicans who don't much, who value the Bible more than the Constitution, that's okay if they believe that. It's not okay if the President of the United States believes that. And I'll tell you, Guy, I'll yield to no one my knowledge of and the impact on me and my family of 9/11 other than those who died that day. I saw the plane 2 seconds later with its tail sticking out of the World Trade Center. As important as 9/11 was and is, it's not more important than our 200-year history and Constitution.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And, you know, in Bush's background, it's not like, you know, he hasn't preached democracy, nor has he been part of any kind of a democratic organization, but instead he's been involved with big autocratic business people most
Absolutely
of his
right.
life. So I'm not sure he understands.
Well, everybody comes from somewhere, And he comes out of the business community, the CEO community, which is hierarchical. His supporters are often very religious, and that's a clerical community, which the flock doesn't really tell the pulpit what to say or do. And he doesn't. And I don't remember him ever giving a speech as a governor or as a candidate saying, we need more democracy. Here's what I'm going to do to increase voting. Here's what I'm going to do to increase transparency. Here's what I'm going to do to stop voter suppression. Never. All his talk about democracy is outside this country. And Eric Severide said, you can't want a democracy abroad while you don't have it at home.
Who can argue with Eric Severide? I mean, after all. Yeah, and what gall it takes to be saying that you're promoting democracy in the Middle East and elsewhere in the world, all the while you've been doing your damnedest to destroy it right here at home. It's incredible to me that what we've shown the rest of the world during this time, here we are saying democracy in the Middle East, and yet...
Now, absolutely. Now, you asked an earlier question. When you're at war, now this is not World War I or World War II, forgive me. It's a war of choice, a mistaken war. Three-quarters of Americans realize we shouldn't be there. And we attacked the country that didn't attack us, everyone now acknowledges. But what Bush is saying is we have to sometimes suspend the law, hence his so-called signing statements, because of a war on terrorism. Oh, by the way, folks, the war on terrorism is unending because there'll always be a terrorist. I mean, we could, and thankfully did, conquer Nazi Germany, and now Germany is prosperous, Western, and democratic. So if you allow the president to be a monarch forever, this reminds me of James Madison's famous statement that you cannot maintain freedom in a constant state of war. And that's what Bush Cheney want. Now, they're going to be out because of term limits and or unpopularity. And the Congress, of course, went Democratic. Democrats are imperfect. That's not my point. But I'll tell you, whatever you think of Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, they don't wake up thinking about what laws they can violate and come up with excuses to act like Richard Nixon or the dictators we fought.
Absolutely. And, you know, they've used 9/11 to spread fear, and they've used the fear to advance some pretty anti-democratic agendas. You know, the torture, the outing CIA people, the FISA, the warrantless wiretapping. Do you think he could have gotten away with any of this without using fear, the fear of another 9/11 as a club on the American people? And furthermore, it appears to me that we've got another guy trying to wait in the wings, a fellow New Yorker there, to keep this agenda going right on in the name of one Rudy Giuliani.
They could have gotten away with it. It's the most explicit fear-mongering I've ever seen. Let us stipulate that Joe McCarthy was a more noxious, drunk, and personal horror than George W. Bush. You don't want to have lunch with McCarthy. I can see having lunch with Bush. However, Joe McCarthy couldn't unilaterally invade two Muslim countries, one erroneously. Couldn't unilaterally suspend the Constitution, though he would have liked to. So Bush is more menacing than McCarthy because of his power. Now, here's Giuliani. Let me share with your audience that I know him not just as a New Yorker. He was the ranking Republican, of course, as mayor. I was the number two citywide official as the elected public advocate in New York. So we went at it for 8 years. I watched him. He has, Guy, the intelligence and the work ethic to be president. He does not have the temperament or the character. Anybody listening who really likes George W. Bush's messianic, militaristic, stubborn, my way or the highway ways will love Rudy Giuliani.
Oh, yeah.
Because when he governed as a chief executive in a city, he was sued 23 times for violating speech, you know, shutting down advertisements, trying to shut down a museum. 21 of 23 times, this lawyer lost in court. He refused to meet with the leading black officials of the state and the city for years at a time, and when someone criticized him, his answer was, "Well, let's debate this." He would try to destroy the reputation of his opponents with personal attacks. So I don't think he'll be the nominee or the president. If you care about if losing our democracy is convincing that there's a way to save our democracy, hence our last chapter, Guy, the way to make sure that we're not losing it but actually lose it, is to elect Giuliani.
Oh, I quite agree. The guy frightens me. It really does.
I see, though, in Florida, he's tied with Hillary Clinton in general election.
Yes, well, I live here, but I don't represent. I live in Southwest Florida, the bastion of conservatism in the Naples, Fort Myers area. It couldn't be more red than it is here. It amazes me what these fellows try and get away with. And when you stop back, they've used the war as an excuse for everything now. Thinking back through history, I know Harry Truman at least thought about suspending some of our freedoms during a war. Didn't Truman, maybe my memory is wrong here, but didn't Truman and Fulbright, for example, have some hearings as to what we could and could not do during the war?
Senator Harry Truman, during the World War II, shortly after Pearl Harbor, held hearings on how there were rip-offs by defense contractors costing billions and costing lives, the Halliburtons of that era. By the way, even though he did that during the war, of course, Franklin Roosevelt later chose him as vice president, very consequentially, in 1944. J. William Fulbright, the senator from Arkansas, held hearings during the Vietnam War and exposed and explained what was going wrong with that war. So this is traditional. While the Bush-Cheney regime was in power and in Congress for 6 years, there were no hearings on Iraq. None. Now, of course, especially led by Congressman Henry Waxman of California and his government reform and oversight committee, there have been hearings showing the waste, the fraud, the unnecessarily lost lives, and democracy is very enduring. So I am confident if people vote based on democracy and that they have all the information, that this fear-mongering will end. However, 9/11, people like to avoid pain. And when you scare people that the Russians are coming or the terrorists are coming, and there are threats out there, it can scare enough people. It worked in 2002. It worked in 2004. But they've run out the string. And the public now, I don't think, will be gulled as they were before.
Well, that old sky is falling routine. It's got to stop sooner or later. I want to ask you a broad question about your book. Do you think there's a broad enough audience for the book? And what I mean is, I know almost my entire audience most likely agrees with every point you've made in it. And those on the right probably disagree with every word of it. But being as polarized as we are today in the U.S., who are you planning to reach with your book?
Well, two steps. One is there's nothing wrong with informing and exciting your base. So when Fox Cable keeps telling its listeners, implying that Saddam was behind 9/11 and we got to stop his weapons of mass destruction, it's a bad example, but a true one. It excites the base, and they're allowed to do it. So I want to inform everyone listening that while immediate issues are urgent, global warming, Iraq, saving Social Security, none of that can work unless we make sure we expand the franchise and appoint judges who enforce the law irrespective of politics. Now, at the same time, you want to reach out to other audiences. And you know, Guy, there are moderate Republicans of good faith, former Congressman Jim Leach, General Anthony Zinni, former Senator James Danforth, former National Security Advisor Brent Scowcroft. These are all good Republicans who are ashamed and horrified by these extremists in the White House. And so I hope that fair-minded people will either read Losing Our Democracy or hear our show or see a summary or a review of it. And it may educate a handful of people, especially young people, who when they decide what party to go for, often stick with that party. So it's a fight for the hearts and minds of everyone, but especially the young, to determine next generational politics.
Oh, I so hope you're right. Are there that many people who have changed their minds about Bush? I mean, has it been the loss of American lives in the war, or has it been the staggering cost of the whole thing, or the apparent willingness to deprive us of some of our freedoms? What exactly do you think has driven these people away from Bush, and did they see it in him? What did they see in him in the first place?
Well, the false assurance. assurances that, that the reasons for the war are weapons of mass destruction at all. People now see that that was false. Second, they were told it would be a piece of cake, a cakewalk, wouldn't take more than 6 weeks, or certainly not more than 6 months, to quote then-Secretary Rumsfeld. And now the cost in blood and treasure, loss of esteem around the world, the $1.5 trillion in costs, according to the congressional estimate of this week, has soured people. It's a big number of people, Guy. Let's say Bush gets elected with 50% or so. His numbers rose to 55 to 60% at his second inaugural, which is normal. It then rose to 80% after 9/11, of course, just prior to that, because the country was rallying behind him. Well, it's gone from 80, 60, 50 to 30. And if you go from 80% to 30% favorable, by definition, that's 50 points over 80 points. A majority of the people who at one time said Bush was their guy have dropped him. I don't mean a little incremental loss. I mean a collapse. So he may be able to walk into hell to the chief. He may be able to launch an attack because he's commander-in-chief. But he has lost the goodwill of Americans, lost the trust of Americans, and he's earned that failure as we try to connect the dots in losing our democracy.
I think it's we're at the point now that those who are still solidly behind him and his policies, that section of people, that piece of the pie, is probably not worth trying to even talk to those people anymore. They're still with him.
I hope I don't insult anybody in your audience, but 42% of Americans believe in demonic possession. Okay, I'm not going to win a debate with them. I'm just not. And to support Bush after all these court decisions, after the failure in Iraq, the failure of Katrina, what are called E. coli conservatives, all those who are against government regulation until Enron and E. coli bacteria show how the market system and foodstuffs, you know, we have to protect against them. The arguments won't work anymore. And a quarter of Americans believed in Richard Nixon when he quit, and that's the base.
Yeah,
the base.
Oh, that's scary. You know, they've used this fear card over and over again. The threat of terrorism. We hear that war on terror. All the, you know, didn't we have a whole lot more of a threat to our democracy from the Nazis and the Soviet Union? And yet, you know, we survived both of those things, and yet still these guys have used this fear card to make it sound like this is the greatest threat there's ever been to our nation, and I don't think it is.
You know, former Vice President Al Gore, 2 years ago, pre-laureate, said, you know, if our Constitution largely stayed intact, with exceptions, I mean, it's a shameful thing that Franklin Roosevelt incarcerated Japanese Americans, and it was ruled unconstitutional, and they apologized later. But if we didn't engage in this level of illegality and betrayal of our values against the Nazis, against the fascists, is the current threat really worse? You know, the Soviets, of course, could have destroyed America. That's a threat. And we had to navigate that, and we did it painfully but successfully, not going to war, but they collapsed of their own contradictions. So why this time? And I think the answer is to keep a certain junta in power. Sorry, but that's what's going on. And they will apparently say or do anything to maintain power, but I think the public is now immunized to them because of how many things they've said that have turned out to be false. I have 20 pages in Losing Our Democracy where they say something. Oh, well, the Pentagon says, we didn't use white phosphorus on the Iraqis. We wouldn't do that. Well, we did. Or, I never said that there was an imminent threat to America, said George Bush. Again and again, he did.
Yes.
When you look at this Niagara of untrue, false, or misleading statements, I don't know why any journalist will ever quote Dick Cheney again with a straight face.
No, I don't either.
I mean, that sounds harsh, but
Not harsh. You can prove it. I mean,
list everything he said, and the record speaks for itself.
I've got pages and pages. I've heard you say, I forget where, probably on another interview, that you were a couple of senators like Tom Coburn away from losing our democracy, or a couple of justices like Anton Scalia, or maybe one more president away. You know, that could happen at any time. And another justice like Scalia could happen within a week. And God only knows what kind of a guy another red state Oklahoma might send in. I mean, we've got guys like Tom Tancredo and Duncan Hunter, for God's sake, in Washington, D.C., along with a lot more. Do you think America's going to come around and understand the threat that some of these people...
Here's how close we are. Of course, if a justice dies and it was 2000 to 2006, Bush could have gotten another Scalia or Thomas, and of course did get Roberts and Alito. If an Asian Pacific Islander American hadn't filmed Senator George Allen calling him macaca, a slur which helped elect Jim Webb, that one film, that Webb victory, changed the Senate from Republican to Democrat. So without that, if another Scalia or Thomas or Alito or Roberts were nominated, they could be confirmed. With that, Guy, I don't believe this Democratic Senate, narrow majority as it is, will confirm a radical justice again. But if there's a conservative Republican elected in 2008, clearly, some of the a majority of the liberals are over 70, a majority of the conservatives are under 70 on the court. There will be another potentially one or two justices, and then you can just kiss the Clean Air Act and Roe v. Wade and speech rights goodbye. That's how close we are. We're not, of course, one Tom Coburn away from he wants to jail doctors who commit abortions because it's murder. We're not a couple of them away anymore, because we now have a majority, and I, frankly, all the data indicates, although you don't want to coast, that the House and Senate will become more Democratic in 08, given the number of seats that are up from Republicans and the trend lines.
Well, it certainly needs to become, we need greater majorities to overcome some of the blue dogs and all that. The George Allen story you just mentioned and macaca thing, it just points out that the error of Democrats' ways, when Harry Reid, our last Supreme Court nominee was up, and Harry Reid says, well, we've got to pick our fights, and we really didn't pick a fight on that. Maybe we couldn't have stopped it, but they could have. It just shows how important some of these singular things really are that we've thrown the towel in on many, many times.
Yeah, well, Bush is very clever. Maybe he'll pick a black moderate Republican next time and imply that Democrats are racist to oppose him or her. But I think Democrats now have been snookered several times. Roberts and Alito had nice public manners, wouldn't answer questions, and we see how radical they are. They're always for business over consumers, therefore resegregating American education. That's true. They've undermined the Brown v. Board decision and affirmative action. And so I don't think that would happen again. But look, Bush is getting his way on the war, largely because of the filibuster rule and the Constitution saying you need two-thirds vote to override a veto.
Well, I'd like to see us make them actually go ahead with a filibuster, make them put the blood, sweat, and tears into it for a change.
Well, Reid did that a few months ago and got the cots out.
Yeah, lasted one whole evening.
Yeah, you got a point.
Finally, Mark, I'd like to ask you why that we on the left have such a deficit in the media. You know, despite all the claims by the right that we control the media, why are we having such a hard time promoting our message? I mean, we've got lots of talented people. Why do we have such a hard time getting a foothold? I mean, Air America, for example, getting new affiliates in major markets. I keep track of this, and it seems like we've got a hard time even keeping our heads above water. Why? Is it the nature of the beast, the listener, or is it a business problem, or is it right-wing control of the ownership? What do you think the major problem we're facing is?
Problem one is who owns stations and who owns national radio networks. It's Republican businessmen, not always, but often. And Citadel, for example, has 258 stations and 1,000 hours of conservative talk, zero liberal talk. By the way, 60-40, maybe. 1,000 to zero? Come on. Second, radio, as you know, I know, is advertiser-supported, and a lot of corporate advertisers put Air America, our controversial, you know, happily controversial hosts, they don't want to advertise, so we're on a no-buy list, for example. And you add all this up, we're sailing into a headwind. Now, we have great talent on our air, from Lionel to Tom Hartman, Randy Rhodes, Rachel Maddow, you name it. And it's not just left-right. As you know, Guy, you got to be entertaining, informative, opinionated. But if these networks and these corporations won't allow us on, I feel like I'm playing in the World Series and Cheney is my umpire calling balls and strikes on me. It's not going to work. I'm fighting an uphill battle. One last point. Air America is going to be really working hard for more affiliates and building out our website. So anybody wants to come to airamerica.com, I hope we get eyeballs and your ears reading us and listening to us. We have to be a multimedia company to survive in a world where so many people, especially younger people, get their information online, not only on air.
Well, that's one of the ways I've explained this a lot of times. It's like the old shelf space in the grocery store. You know, if you're Lay's potato chips and you got no place to put your chips, you can't buy, you know, you can't get space in the store. And that's I think what we're facing on the left with the radio stations being owned, like you said, by many of those.
What's interesting is the blogosphere. Of course, no one owns the blogosphere. Any kid with $2 to rub together could start a website. The blogosphere is democratic. And liberals dominate in the blogosphere. There are exceptions like Drudge. But we dominate in the blogosphere because no one owns it. But when we have to go through corporate owners, then there's an inhibition that holds us back unfairly. But we're shouting at the tides, and I think we'll win.
Well, I hope you're right. We need more listeners. We need higher visibility, and we need to do a much better job in the media than we've done. We've certainly gotten beaten over the head. Hopefully.
Well, we're fighting back at Air America Radio and in losing our democracy.
Well, we are here at the Head On Radio Network. We're working hard at it, too, and it's just, I guess, something we have to persevere and stay at it. Mark, I want to thank you so much. I wish you continued success. You can get your book just about anywhere, right?
Sure, Amazon.com or a bookstore. And congratulations on Head On Radio. I follow what you do and admire it.
Losing Our Democracy, How Bush, the Far Right, and Big Business Are Betraying America and How to Stop It by Mark Green. Mark, thanks so much for being on the
thanks
program.
Thanks so much, Guy.
Yeah. There's a guy that knows a lot about radio. There's a guy that knows a lot about politics, been around consumerism, big consumer advocate in New York City, very, very, very well spoken, and a good book. I think you'll enjoy this book, and like you said, it's available just about anywhere. Hey, Bill Moyers wrote a foreword for it. How much better can you do than that, huh? If you got Bill Moyers writing a foreword for you, you've done something right. Hey, we're going to pause for a break. We'll be back in just a minute. Oh, I love that piece. Shooby-doo-dop. Shooby-doo-bop. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to the Guy James Show, a proud member of the Head On Radio Network, and we're glad to have all of you along with us. Our thanks today to Carolyn Kay and Mark Green for being guests on the program. I got this really cool email. That dates me, doesn't it, when I say that? Really cool. I don't have sideburns and an Elvis haircut. Really, I don't. I got this really cool email. There, I said it again. Of a cyber friend, and it's called, well, let me just read it to you. I think it's great. Guess it shows the frustration of the American public right now, of the average Joe lunch bucket. You know what I mean? That guy, you, me. It shows the frustration. Guess what's in my wallet? Not your credit card anymore, or any other ones for that matter. I read in the papers, and this is the Dear Capital One, okay? Dear Capital One. I read in the papers and saw on TV how you and your pals are writing off billions of dollars worth of debts because your Harvard MBA geniuses apparently could not understand how a Ponzi scheme works. I'm sure that you will then understand how I and my debt ridden cohorts are now deciding that if experts like you can get caught unawares, you will certainly understand why we're writing off our debts to you and your pals. We don't even owe you billions, and if we had been blessed with atomic microscope vision, a legal degree, and a patience of Job, perhaps we might have made it through all of your whereases and party of the first parts in that tissue-esque 14-page love note you send with your statements. So unless you want the cocoa-stained couch we've been paying on for 3 years now, or the outgrown shoes that Johnny left on the back seat of the car that got repossessed last week, or the other stuff that we've paid for many times, minus the late charges and 35% interest rates, this letter will have to do. Thinking about coming after our house? Well, good luck. The bank and the second mortgage holders are duking it out right now with the third mortgage holder. We're sleeping on inflatable mattresses in my sister-in-law's family room. So you say you'll ruin our credit? Take a number, pal. Maybe you can fold all these letters up and use them to level that wiggly coffee table. Sincerely, Mr. and Mrs. Chumps No More. I love that. Whoever wrote that is so indicative of the terrible frustration that there is right now all across America. People having such a hard time, and I know that. I'm very aware of it. I have many, many friends who could have written that letter, and I know you do as well. And when I think back over my lifetime, I think this is probably economically the most difficult time that I have seen for the average working man. And my heart and soul is always with the average working man. Those are the people I love. Those are the people I respect. Those are the people that raised me, the people I grew up with. I grew up in a farm community, and people were either farmers or lunch bucket folks. And those are the people that built America. And how sad it is indeed to see what's happening on the economic stage right now here in this country. There is no help. Foreclosures are at a record pace. The loss of jobs are at a record pace. The loss of benefits, the pensions are going by the wayside. The health benefits are going by the wayside. The co-pays are up. Co-pays are up, and your percentage of your premiums, if you work for somebody that provides even a modicum of health care, your percentage of the premiums is going up. Most of them have dropped dental and eye care. It's a travesty. That's what's happening, that after you work so many years for a company that you know you can't depend on that anymore. And I feel bad for the working people of America. And hey, I'm one of them. And I just think, how are we going to get out from under this? How's it going to be that we get out from under this? I don't know. I just don't know. A lot of things I wanted to talk about today, but I'm not going to get to once again. I'm really good at that, aren't I? Saying I'm going to talk about this, that, or the other thing. I did want to mention this thing, something that particularly sticks in my craw. Today, the House of Representatives passed on a largely party-line vote, legislation that would only partially fund our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan, but fully embolden our enemies. Yes, they said it again. Here we go. Embolden our enemies. Once again, the Democratic, this is coming from the White House, once again, the Democratic leadership is taking this debate down a well-worn path that calls for arbitrary withdrawal from the battlefield, despite the gains our military has made over the past year. These votes, like the dozens of previous failed votes, put the interest of radical interest groups ahead of the needs of our military and their mission. If legislation comes to the president in this form, he will certainly veto it. Congress has had ample time to pass legislation to fund our troops. The original supplemental request was made in February and augmented in October, but because congressional Democrats insist in going through with another round of political votes and vetoes, Pentagon planners will be forced to focus on accounting maneuvers instead of military maneuvers. Before Congress leaves for recess in December, it should send to the president a clean emergency funding bill without arbitrary withdrawal dates. Perhaps the president, who is not listening to the will of the people, is really the problem here. If you're going to make such sweeping claims as to say that a bill that sets deadlines for troop redeployment emboldens our enemies, you bastards, saying that once again, you put a deadline on a bill and they say, "We had troop retreat, it emboldens our enemies." If you're going to say that, you ought to provide the logic and the proof within which that statement rests. You know, the whole problem is that Karl Rove and company and that whole cabal in the White House has leaned on the trust us strategy for so long they don't realize that it's not working anymore. And just because Perino, the president's press secretary, says it so doesn't make it such, does it? And yet, the Democrats will go running off like a bunch of little girls over this. Oh, don't call us names. No, don't say that we've emboldened our enemies again. Oh, no. And you know all those shotgun-toting, hunting cap-wearing, Dick Cheney hunting pals are all going to jump right in on that's right. That's right, they're emboldening our enemies. Why, every time one of you people say something like that, them terrorists, they just get a little meaner and a little stronger because you might as well be get writing them a paycheck. It's disgusting. It really is. I don't know if I don't. I guess I don't have time for this. I found a fascinating nugget from American history about waterboarding. I think I'll save that for the next program. I think I'll save that. And, of course, I know you've all heard about this example of all the progress we've been hearing about in Iraq later. The leader of an anti-Al-Qaeda Sunni group is accusing U.S. troops of mistakenly killing dozens of his fighters during a battle north of Baghdad. The Sheikh told Al Jazeera television that he tried repeatedly to call American commanders and tell them that they were fighting their friends. U.S. military officials confirmed troops killed 24 fighters in a battle in the same area. The military says the clash began as soldiers searched for Al-Qaeda extremists believed hiding there, and U.S. officials say initial reports indicate soldiers looking for Al-Qaeda operatives found armed men in the area, determined they were hostile, and began firing. As troops pursued the gunmen, they came under fire from several directions and called in airstrikes. U.S. spokesmen in Baghdad say they're still gathering details of the fighting. Now, doesn't that sound familiar? Still gathering details. Oh, I love it. I make one little... the chat room. I made that little statement like, run like little girls. Says, guy, have you ever played in a women's softball league? Well, I'm not going there. No, I have not played in a women's softball league. And I don't want to claim that I could keep up with some of the great female sprinters either, so I won't go there. If I offended you with that comment, run like a bunch of little girls or little boys, okay? I'm talking little ones. Yeah. 866-546-5254. I guess you don't have a whole lot of time to call the program now. Getting down toward the end today. You know, I treasure my time with you each and every week. I do. I really appreciate all of the feedback that we get in each and every. I do want to remind everybody that there'll be some changes on our website coming up here pretty soon. I'm going to have a new address. It's the Guy James Show, 5390 Park Road, number 3, Fort Myers, Florida, 33908. We'll have that posted pretty soon. And we're rearranging some telephone numbers and so forth. So be sure and check out the site here in the next couple of days if you haven't already done so. Got time for, well, let me see here. I don't know. We'll try this once. We'll, okay, if the phone ever stops, got time for about 1 minute. Hi, you're listening to the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. It's Phil up in Daytona.
Hi, Phil. We got about 1 minute.
I hear you. Great show, and everything that's been said, is all the more reason, folks, to get out there and keep pushing for impeachment. PledgeToImpeach.org, AfterDowningStreet.org, Congressman Kucinich and his legislation. Let's keep working to get petitions going. It's up to us, people. All the more reason to push for impeachment.
Phil,
thank you.
Thanks for your call.
You bet, Guy. Thanks for the show.
Well, I hope our Congress critters can show the guts it takes to go through with the hearings. I hope John Conyers will do that. Right now, I don't have a lot of hope that he's going to do that. He hadn't shown me any evidence so far that he's going to go ahead and have the hearings. We shall see. I know Dennis Kucinich has spoken to him and said that he is inclined to do so, but is getting a lot of pressure from up above. So we shall see. If it happens, that'd be a great thing. But don't hold your breath. But keep hammering away. Don't give up on that. Don't forget, stay tuned here on the Head On Radio Network. Mark's show coming up next. Bob after that. Always good programming here. You might be surprised how good programming is here. Good as it is anywhere, or better. Let me just say it that way. I want to thank you for listening to the program, the Guy James Show here in the Head On Radio Network. Thanks to Billy Shears, music director. And I want you to remember, you heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you later, gang.